It's Tuesday, June 25th, 2013, and welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
And I'm Cindy Rich.
I'm Mike Joya.
Welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers, the show about teaching and learning with technology. And today we've got a couple of things to share. Cindy, what do we have?
We're going to talk a little bit about ISTE. Anybody involved in education that uses technology is familiar with that. It's huge. So we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on there and what those of us who can't be there can take advantage of.
Okay. Mike, what do you got?
Oh, well, I'm going to talk about what's been in the news for the past month and a little bit about privacy.
Okay.
Especially with the recent events that have been released to the world.
Yeah, a little bit of a preview there on the security spotlight and certainly all the NSA news.
Yes.
So here we go. First today, I would like to spend just a few minutes here talking about one of the largest educational conferences going on currently down in San Antonio, Texas, and it's the ISTE, I-S-T-E, International Society for Technology and Education Conference, and it's one of the largest ed tech conferences in the world.
And it's huge.
And both you and I, Cindy, have been before down there. I think last year they said they had around 13,000 attendees. And I think I saw on Twitter that they were advertising possibly 20,000 this year.
Wow, that's so amazing.
It's a huge conference going on. So even though we couldn't make it, we kind of follow along. One of the nice things with social media and the virtual world and your professional learning networks is you can kind of follow along and see some of the experiences that they're having.
That's right.
And one of the hashtags on Twitter is #ISTE13. So just kind of a tip out there, if you are on Twitter using this, you can do a search for that hashtag and you'll find a lot of folks down there, you know, tweeting about their experiences, sharing blog postings, sharing some of the other things available to them down there. So,
and so it either makes you miserable because you're so bummed because you're not there, or you look at it and you think, okay, I already knew that, or I'm doing that in my classroom, so I'm good.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of cool because as you see the things that are being tweeted, you recognize things people are doing, and it's good. It makes you feel good because you know that you do at least know what's going on.
Right.
And it's exciting to see how things are building. It really is kind of it's almost like Fashion Week in New York, where it's the clothes you probably wouldn't wear to teach in, but you like to see what's going to be the new trend and pick little bits and pieces of it. So you don't have to be a hardcore techie to check it out.
Right. And one of the other things, there's kind of a counter trend running. Those of us that aren't at ISTE, there's another hashtag that people are starting to use, and that's #NotAtISTE. So there's a group, and you know, every now and then, one of the big things on Twitter are these chats, these educational chats and things. So there was a group the other night that I participated in a little bit, and you know, like I said, kind of sharing notes and things back and forth virtually. It's a good thing. It expands your horizon because you can see, you know, a lot of things that folks are doing out there that maybe you haven't thought about.
Right.
And then, as you said, it's kind of nice reassuring. So, well, we've been there, done that. We're already there.
Or you see somebody talks about they were doing something and it didn't work, and you're like, okay, it wasn't me.
Yeah.
We need to tweak this process just a little bit and make it work. And so, you know, not only do you, sometimes you see these amazing things and it just makes you feel like such a slacker because you're not doing that. And so it's good to be a part of the process of building those things and understanding how, you know, it is painful and you have a lot of growing pains when you're developing these things.
Yeah, and one of the things that I miss from being down there face-to-face, they always have the poster sessions where they bring in students and things from the school and they let the students explain their projects. So I've been seeing a few tweets about that, and there's nothing that you can do in the virtual world to actually be there to do that. So just wanted to mention that, give a shout-out to all of you down at ISTE and all of you not at ISTE.
Right, and I had mentioned also they have a new component they added this year called Access ISTE, which I thought was really interesting. It's the first time I've seen this in a professional conference, and I'm curious if this is something that's going to catch on
Yeah, and so that's like a virtual pass that you have a username and password to log in and see some of the events.
It's like $199, I saw, and it's not every session. So there are only like five sessions
probably each. The keynotes, possibly. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, right, the keynotes. And then for each time slot, they pick five sessions, and you can choose one of those. And it says actually interact with the speaker and the people. So I'm not sure how they
might have a Skype session or
if
something.
If it's a Q&A type thing at the end, maybe, or how it's set up and that. But, you know, that I thought that was interesting, at least for some folks, if their schools will pay for this.
Yeah.
Instead. But still, you're not getting to choose from, because, man, there are a lot of sessions.
Yeah.
At that conference.
Yeah, hundreds and hundreds.
And so you're only getting to pick from the five that they've set up for this. And so it's something you really have to consider, I guess, and look at what the choices are before you spend that kind of money on it.
Yep.
But it's still a pretty cool option.
Up next, we have our security spotlight. And Cindy, you just asked a good question off air, so we'll just pick up here from what we were talking about the ISTE conference.
Okay. Well, I was, my range of vision is only within teacher conferences or education conferences and some history conferences. And so I didn't know, as a tech professional, is this something you're seeing happen with this virtual attendance kind of thing with those, or no?
Well, our main conference is Black Hat, and I don't think they're for information security, and I don't think they have this access yet. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the sales use like web conferences to try to sell their product under the impression that this is a teaching or on like access management or phishing 2.0.
I mean, more like a webinar type.
Yeah, like a webinar saying we're going to discuss this topic, and then they talk about it for like 10 minutes, and then the next 20 minutes is a sales pitch.
Yeah.
But, with Black Hat, it's interesting. They probably should start getting to that because it's really expensive to go.
So Black Hat?
Yes, and Black Hat's kind of a term for there's White Hat and Black Hat.
Hackers.
And that's what hackers use. Black Hat hackers are actually malicious hackers, and White Hat hackers are actually the good guys, either reformed Black Hat hackers or just information security people that will do hacking
to understand.
Protecting the world.
Understand better. What's also interesting with this conference is DEF CON goes on at the same time, which is the hackers conference, where they come in and do demonstrations of accessing databases and different new tools and scripts for hacking.
And it's a big deal. It's really high profile. You'll see in the news they offer cash prizes and things if you can hack into our system. I mean, big dollars.
And what's interesting is that the Black Hat, if you register for Black Hat, you get a reduced registration fee, pretty much almost like 90% off registration fee for DEF CON, because it's two hotels down on the Vegas Strip
from
the other ones. So it's very common for information security people to go to DEF CON and actually meet the hackers and stuff. It's very interesting how the good guys versus the bad guys, if you want to look at it like that, are actually very open to communication and talking.
So all hacking is not illegal, or is it?
To a certain point, it depends. There's malicious hacking. Any doing anything that causes a program to have an error or not do as it was designed is considered hacking.
Okay.
Even if it's an accidental action, it causes a program to crash, and that's considered hacking.
But these folks are just so proud of what they're doing, they don't mind showing their faces.
Right. It's kind of like a badge of honor.
Type thing.
To say, like, well, look at us, look at how fast I can crack this password. And in fact, it's pretty interesting to look. I just posted something on our Twitter using basically what our normal computers now with a Core 6 type processor. Mm-hmm. It can calculate.
I saw that.
It can calculate. I think it was 100 million passwords using just uppercase and lowercase in a second. So if you use an 8-character password using uppercase or lowercase, it will crack it in 35 minutes because it can process so many passwords.
That's insane.
So that's just a little pitch for password strength. It goes up a little bit more with characters
Right. Which is why you're always saying an uppercase, lowercase number and special character, because that's more permutations for that to go through.
Right. And there's formulas. It could be just a straight dictionary attack when you just use words from the dictionary with some numbers in the end.
If you use easy passwords, it's easy to do anymore.
Right, and it's your own fault. Although, what's interesting, people are like, well, I'll just make a 21-character password. Well, if you get to computers that are smart and hackers are smart, anything over, like, say, 16, it just breaks it up into two different separate passwords and runs the program simultaneously.
Oh.
So it's you don't gain much by having a 21-length password.
Yeah.
Very much time at all.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, talking about the black hat and the white hat, and, you know, every now and then you will see a hacker, not all of them will come out. I mean, a lot of them, you know, are kind of, you know, under in the underworld, you know, you never know the identity or anything. Everybody's anonymous, which is, you know, the famous hacking group, Anonymous.
Right.
But every now and then you'll see a group come out and say, we know this exploit, and, you know, you have 7 days or 10 days, and then we'll release it. I see that in the press every now and then, which, you know, that does tremendous amount of damage,
right?
To systems out there.
And a lot of your white hat hackers will go ahead and do something. They'll try to find exploits. And even companies will encourage it. Google will offer cash prizes if you can find vulnerabilities in their search engine or Gmail. I know if you can figure out a method to hack Gmail, they will give you $10,000 to $20,000 for that information.
Mm-hmm. Because then they can create ways to stop it.
They can go ahead and redesign the code or however the exploit got into the system.
It's kind of always that. I always think of it as the arms race out there. You fix one and then they find a way around it. Then you fix that way. And
right.
So, you know, it's interesting. The other thing security-wise in the news this month is I saw Facebook had another exploit, whatever you would want to call it. I started to say privacy breach, but
And that one's it's different, and it's not so much a privacy breach because the information it was released was telephone numbers and names, possibly of your contacts, and only people in your contact tree could actually see that. So it was definitely interesting that Facebook even they kind of quietly released it from their security side of the house in their the whole system that they have. But that gets into privacy, and people are so touchy now with privacy. Rightly so, I guess you would say, with the classified systems coming out from the NSA.
This month was just full of the NSA news.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, as an information security person, I'm okay with it. But as a citizen, I'm not entirely okay with it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as information security, having the information and knowing it always makes your job easier. Is it right? I don't know. It depends. I mean, me personally, I don't inherently assume all my stuff is private. In fact, I inherently assume anything I put on the internet can be seen by anyone. Mm-hmm. Just like this talk I'm having right now, anyone's going to be able to hear it.
But again, I don't think the average person looks at it that way.
Which is,
when they see Facebook and make a check mark here for private, you know, they're thinking that only me and my other friend or friends see this.
Right. And that's for everyday people. But it's just, you know, your grandmother rule. If you're not comfortable with your grandmother reading it or seeing it, that's how you should approach anything on the internet. Mm-hmm. You know, and you can get into the lines of encryption. And I'm sure there's tools out there. In fact, I know of firewall tools, advanced firewall tools that will unencrypt and then see the information in it and then re-encrypt it.
And as a hacker, I take that as a challenge whenever I see that encryption, you know, come across, because there are possibly ways to break some of it.
And if a hacker can do it, you can kind of be pretty sure that the government can do it too.
Or the companies and corporations that host the data themselves, because they're in charge of the encryption.
Right. So, you know, you can get up in arms about it.
Strange times.
It's just that you should just assume that it's not private. And then it gets into the whole risk.
Right.
You know, do you want to risk your, you know, the country's safety over privacy? And that's a very hard question, because that's different to everyone.
Again, because the average person has no idea those threat levels and things that, you know, the NSA folks are seeing.
Right.
Well, and don't you think, too, there's a difference between having it and collecting it and using it? And so, I mean, I have no problem.
I think that's pretty subjective on the person.
Right.
Because,
oh, right. Absolutely. Because I have no problem with someone collecting anything of my phone calls, any of that stuff. I mean, it's, you know, if they were going to sell it to phone companies or, you know, things like that, then it's different. But as far as the government collecting it for security reasons, you know, to me personally, I don't have a problem with that.
Right. And like I said, it's subjective. Now, they can say, well, we only have your phone numbers and the time you make your calls. And
the phone companies have that already.
They already have that. And, you know, that can be, you know, pretty public quickly. But if they have it, they're going to use it. That a lot of people have that feeling like, oh, if they have this information,
I think that's what many use it. Yeah, like kind of that slippery slope of, well, if you have this, well, let's check and see what else is going on type, that data mining and things that I think a lot of people are worried about.
Well, and so much of it, when things are good, you don't think about when something goes wrong, then we want the government.
Then it's
and
like,
the
why didn't you catch this? You know, there were signs right here, you had it, and it's like, you know, connecting those dots is.
Right.
It's you know, that hindsight's always 20/20.
Absolutely.
And that's that whole risk thing. Do you have ultimate privacy with high level risk, or do you have low risk and no privacy? And it looks really bad in the government if they had a way to prevent something, but we didn't do it.
Right.
Because then they're like, oh, why didn't you stop this? And then they're like, well, you didn't want us to because you didn't want us mining your data, your phone calls and your emails and stuff like that. So there's no way for us to prevent this without doing giving up this privacy level. And it's hard.
Yeah. I think it's going to be with us, you know, from here on out. And we're going to struggle going back and forth with some of those things because in human history, this is the first time we've even come close to having this capability.
Right. And, you know, in the end, it's if you're so worried about your privacy, don't put it out there.
Right.
Give someone the opportunity to actually see it.
Right.
Granted, there's a lot of things that you don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. Online banking's, I mean, I don't have a bank in this state, so
but you choose not to have a bank in this state,
right? So, and I assume that level of risk that I'm going to do everything through the internet,
But in the banking system, you know, they have the insurance and some of the safeguards to make the general public, secure with that,
and they have a national, federal, and international standard with the payment card industry and how they secure all their information,
But thinking even with schools and grades and things like that, and you have people concerned, and yet, but with that too, you have different districts, different schools have different ways of doing things, and different tech coordinators. Some are very afraid or concerned. Mm-hmm. Others are pretty loose with things. You know, we have stuff where we can't put student records online. We don't want anybody to know that. Yet in the newspaper, they'll have perfect attendance and honor roll, which, you know, that's personal information that should not be public without permission, and that too. So, you know, we live in a world where,
It's taking the analog world digital, so we're really struggling with some of those issues that we do deal with in the real world, and now we're putting them online, so we're having to deal with them there. I remember, back whenever the internet and the web started in schools, people just being very, very cautious with posting, like you said, the honor roll, where they had no problem. Here's the picture of the students with all their names underneath it in the paper. So, a lot of this is common sense and, just being careful with what you post. And, but I do think that we do need to protect our privacy out there. And as you say, I mean, if you don't want it out there online, it's probably best not to.
Right. Just keep it to yourself.
Right. A comedian, and he was talking about this, and he said, I don't have anything illegal, but I have a lot of things that I would be ashamed if anybody saw. And it's like, I think we all have things like that.
This security spotlight things, I think this is a good thing for us just to kind of bounce things off each other every now and then, and just be careful out there. My my technology pick of the week this week is a Windows 8 app called Fotor, F-O-T-O-R. And one of the reasons I wanted to pick this one this week was down at ISTE, they had kind of had a special event down there, and they are all of the teachers, like 10,000 of them, are going to be getting Surface RTs for free.
Nice.
Microsoft's providing those. So a lot of people are going out there and experimenting. And one of the things I think that many will probably have a bit of a struggle with is understanding that the Surface RT is not like a regular Windows PC. You can't run all of the regular PC applications on what we call an x86 platform, because the Surface RT is ARM-based, which is a different processor. So a lot of folks are going to be struggling with, somebody said, I can't put Chrome on my Surface RT. So this Fotor app, because many people will be taking pictures down there at ISTE, and I shared this with you a week or two ago, Cindy. It's one that does the collages.
Yes.
So if you have a bunch of pictures in your camera roll, I think it's got two choices. You can do either edit photo, which is the basic, and then it does some artistic effects.
It does.
Kind of like an Instagram type.
You can add text and things like that to it.
And then the other option is make collages. So I thought it's kind of nice when you're down at ISTE down in San Antonio, and many of you are meeting some of your virtual friends face-to-face for the first time. It'd be kind of nice just to put a little collage or something together of your experience down at ISTE, and then you can print that out and, you know, bring it back with you and, you know, post it on your bulletin board, whatever. So that's mine, Fotor, F-O-T-O-R.
It's very cool. All right, I found something. We go through these little trends in classrooms, and we went through a clicker trend for a while.
Through a couple of waves of those.
We did. And so one of the things that I stumbled across was a registration for an app. It wasn't really an app. It's a more of a site you sign up in as a teacher, and it's called the Answer Pad. And it's then students can get a free app from the App Store or whatever. That is their interactive little
clicker.
Thank you. Gosh, mental block there. And called Tap It. And what they do is then they can answer multiple choice, you know, whatever you want to do. And it adds a whole interactive component to the lesson. Mm-hmm. One of the things I think we're seeing more and more schools getting sets of tablets and things like that. And I've talked to some teachers, and the first few months, it's really cool, fun, exciting. And then they're like, okay, how do we incorporate these into everyday teaching? I mean, the novelty of it is great, but I want to be able to use this as an actual tool in my classroom. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know a whole lot about it. I set it up, and you have to set up a classroom, and I don't have a classroom, so I'm going to add you guys in my classroom, and we'll figure it out in that. But you know, then the student, if you have a set at the school, or if students bring their own, however your school works, and that. But you can do real-time polling, but also, you know, a whole test. I mean, they had number rolls where they would answer. Mm-hmm. A lot of different ways that students can answer, which is great for differentiation. Mm-hmm. And that you can give the same information and let students have different opportunities to answer. And so I thought that was really cool. It's something I'm going to explore, and it's called, and I'm sure this is not the only one of these.
There'll be dozens,
But the one I'm looking at is called the Answer Pad, and the student response system is called Tap It.
Okay, we'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
And I'm going to talk a little bit about bringing your devices and stuff with physical protection of your device. I got a new screen protector for my iPhone. And what makes this one unique compared to all the other ones is a lot of your other screen protectors are plastic. And they're not super clear. And it really takes away the effect of what these nice new screens and the advanced, you know, graphics and all that. And this product is a screen protector by Clearview, is the company, but it is tempered glass, actually. It's actual glass, you can't bend it, and it provides superior protection, as they say. Their video they take a key and they scrape it across the top.
Does it just stick on top?
Yeah, it uses, I think, a form of like static.
Okay.
To actually hold it in place. Mine has a few bubbles in it that don't seem to come out, but they're just in the corners. And if you press really hard, they will go away. But they even show demonstration when they took a hammer to it and it didn't crack the glass itself. The only time it cracked is they held a screw to the top of it and then whacked it with a hammer. And it cracked the glass screen protector, but didn't crack the glass of the phone. So it's very interesting. There's a lot of companies out here that are starting to offer this type of screen protector, and it is super clear. It doesn't hold smudges from your fingers.
That's what I notice about it. I'm looking there. It's like, you must have just polished your phone before you brought it in here, because if you look at mine, it doesn't look like that.
And, you know, you can see one smudge in the corner where I was just kind of pressing that air pocket out, but it's really not that bad. But it's...
no difference in feel from the...
No, it makes, you know, actually it feels nice and smooth, a lot smoother if you give it a shot.
Feel that bump?
Yeah.
That's where I dropped it and hit a rock.
Yeah. And this just feels smooth.
Yeah, it's smooth.
Nice and, you know...
Can you get this like at regular department stores around here? Or do you have to get it online?
I don't know. I got...
We'll provide a link in the show notes.
I got this one straight through Clairview, the company. I know one of my coworkers got it from a different company, and his actually the top part, you know, where it's all black where your speaker and your camera are, actually came in blue, that part, and then clear over the, you know, where the screen is. And he absolutely loves it. He had the Samsung Galaxy Note. He just got that gigantic phone. Like half the size of the iPad.
Right.
Yeah, well, they're definitely worth it. This one saved me. Like I said, it dinged up my screen a little bit, but if I hadn't had that on, I don't know if it would have scratched the glass, but it's always nice. But the one thing, I've got this OtterBox. This is a real pain to get my phone out to put another one on. So.
Yeah. And, you know, this one does add a little thickness. It's about four, you know,
I guess. I can't hardly tell at all.
0.4 millimeters.
Yeah, I can't see that.
So, but, you know, it, and then it gives you a little, because it is so much thicker, they give you a little button that kind of sticks on.
Oh, yeah.
And it comes in four colors with this company.
Pretty cool.
You know, one thing that gets me about the devices is the glare.
Yeah.
In sunlight and that. Everything I have, there's so much glare on it.
Yeah.
And I did find one for the regular iPad, a cover that was glare resistant that helps.
Yeah.
And that, but... yeah, that's, you know, in the car, I was a passenger, not driving, on my phone one day, and it was like, I was holding it upside down to try and see without it glaring.
Okay. Yeah, we'll make sure we'll get a link in the notes for that, and I'll have to give that a try.
Cool.
That wraps it up for episode 152 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, this is Tom Grissom.
Cindy Rich.
Mike Joya.
Keep on learning.